That seems acceptable. Shall we?
My nuts are acceptable.
Your nuts are very acceptable, especially when they're...
Your nuts are more than exceptional.
Oh, thanks, Dad.
They're salted, roasted, and then they have caramelized sugar.
And they're made of leather, so you can come in any kind of weather.
I think his nut sack is the thing that's made out of leather.
Dude, he's our mailman.
He's what?
He's happy, he's gay, he can come twice a day. He's our mailman.
Because
he can come twice a day.
Yes,
he... I mean, he can come in any kind of weather because his sack is made of leather.
I have never heard this before. Hell, you are very strange.
Why buy a comic that might cost more than a dime? Come meet the brothers who are here to waste your time.
Welcome back to the Dime Comic Bros podcast. We are already discussing scrotum.
Scrotum.
So, children beware.
Talking to you, geek gossip.
Last week went stupendously well without me, it would seem. I enjoyed listening to it quite thoroughly. You
we
guys
got were, him.
We got him.
Yeah,
we got him.
You actually did get me for like
a yay! I pointed out some things that were actually in it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, I was like, I bet they're pulling my leg. And I'm like, wait, did they could have conceivably watched it. They could have done it. And then...
Which one of us sounded more like that we've actually watched it?
I don't know, man. But once, when Jacob's like, yes, the Shredder looks like a butter knife. I'm like, yeah, okay. I call bullshit. You know why? Because Shredder's not in the movie.
I know. That's afterwards, I'm like, wait. I'm pretty sure Shredder's not in the movie. He's like, that's where we get him.
Dude, but imagine if they did twinkify Shredder.
They probably could. Probably would.
Would.
They already made him a toaster in the fucking live action one.
We don't talk about the toaster. Yeah. That's more like a can opener. We don't talk
about it. Yeah, he has like a can opener.
Yeah, Swiss Army knife.
I'm Jacob. He's Colin. He's Spencer.
I am Colin.
I am the milkman.
We are here for the news.
My milk tastes amazing.
Give me a taste if it's so good. Fucking in the cup. Let's go.
Okay.
So we got some bad news to get out of the way. From Marvel.com, earlier this month, celebrated comic book artist and inker Dan Green passed away. With a career spanning more than four decades, Green's work brought some of the Marvel Universe's most beloved characters and stories to life for generations of fans to enjoy. Some of those works included Avengers, Amazing Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, Iron Fist, and Captain Marvel. Also, from TheHollywoodReporter.com, Arlene Sorkin, original voice of Harley Quinn and Days of Our Lives actress, dies at 67. Mark Hamill, who often recorded his lines as the Joker opposite Sorkin, also remembered her in a tribute writing. Devastated to learn we've lost the brilliant Arlene Sorkin, not just a wonderful talent, but a truly wonderful person. I'm grateful not only to have worked with her, but to have been her friend. Sending my heartfelt condolences to her family and loved ones. Harley Quinn was intended to be a one-episode character when she debuted on Batman the Animated Series in the 1992 episode Joker's Favor, which introduced her as a henchwoman to Hamill's Joker. Paul Dini, Harley Quinn co-creator and Batman writer, was a college friend of Sorkin's and said he was inspired to cast her after being homesick one day and catching her on an episode of Days of Our Lives in which she played a harlequin in a dream sequence. I thought about a character kind of like her persona at the time, which was the snappy, wisecracking blonde, Dini told The Hollywood Reporter in 2016. Big rip on this one.
Big oof. Side note, when did Tara Strong take over the role? Because I... honestly, I've never heard of this woman.
Yeah, we both thought it was just Tara as the OG.
Because she, apparently, she also voiced her in, like, the new animated series as well.
Hold yes. Tara Strong took over in the new Batman Adventures, which was the updated version of BTS.
But I could and then she played. She still voiced her in that one.
Tara Strong does, yes.
No, now, I mean
Arlene Sorkin did it originally, and then she was part of the inspiration for the character. Tara Strong took over in the relaunch of BTS, and then everything moving forward, or most of everything moving forward. Arlene Sorkin also, I believe, voiced her in Arkham Asylum.
Nah,
pretty sure.
That's so weird.
Yeah, but 67 is quite young.
Oh, that is very young. That sucks so bad.
Yes.
Okay, so From Marvel.com, this December, get caught in the twisted web of Earth 65's Gwen Stacy in an all-new Spider-Gwen limited series. Announced last month at San Diego Comic-Con, the newly titled Spider-Gwen Smash... Really? Really, they had to say Smash? Written by Melissa Flores and drawn by Enid Balam, one of the Spider-Verse's biggest stars, Gwen Stacy, the superhero known as Ghost Spider, will return to her native dimension for an action-packed music tour gone wrong. On the road, Gwen and fans alike will meet awesome new Earth 65 versions of popular heroes including music legends Dazzler and Lila Sheeny, encounter deadly new villains, and more. The Mary Janes are off on a four-city tour as the opening act to one of Earth 65's biggest rock bands. Gwen has promised the band that this big break will be all about the music. No web-slinging, just drums. But when a mysterious assassin targets the headliner, Gwen begins to wonder how she got this gig in the first place. I am having the time of my life writing this limited series, Fuller shared. Getting to explore Gwen Stacy's musical side as she goes on tour with the Mary Janes in her home dimension is an utter delight. Not only will the limits of Spider-Gwen's, aka Ghost Spider's, powers be tested against some unexpected new enemies, but so will her relationships. There isn't an escape portal to another world when things get uncomfortable inside a tour bus. I fucking hate the covers, a lot of them, especially the ones that like over-sexualize Spider-Gwen, because I love the original Spider-Gwen first trades. Yes. The art style is like... When you do something that good with a character it fits so well with, and then you never do it again, there's a huge fucking problem. Like, that is just, like that's a part of the character now, and it's even now more embedded in fucking the new Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse movie.
Yes.
So to just walk away from that and do all these different things, you're just making it another one of those, yeah, this is a comic book, okay. You put it off the side. No one gives a shit. Unless if you're a horny-ass bitch for Spider-Gwen, who is still, like, a teenager, which annoys me.
The third one there is by Peach Momoko, and that one is not sexualized at all.
No, but a lot of them are. These three, out of these three, there's two of them that... At least one that is intentionally sexualized, one that can be construed that way, and another that's actually a fair, I'm going to say, a fair title. Otherwise...
She looks like a kid in that one, too.
Yeah. Which is, if she's a kid, let it be
a
kid, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you, but I do think it's cool to go back to Earth 65, because we haven't been there in a long time.
Earth 65 is whose? Is that hers?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, and Earth 65...
She popped out, like, when she first, you know, came into existence, mm-hmm. and she's been in all the Spider-Verse events and stuff, and it's just been, like, kicking around 616 for a while. Mm-hmm. So I think it's cool to go... back there to new material.
There's you should go back there into her original art style.
Go back to your own country.
Get that, yes. Go back to your own country. Give us back the gay-coded color palette, please. Because that's what I want for Spider-Gwen.
True.
Otherwise, into the trash for you. Bye-bye. And this comes from a actual Spider-Gwen fan before any of the movies. So,
I played D&D before it was cool.
Exactly. This actually infuriates me. This whole thing going on. And it's called Spider-Gwen Smash. Is this written by, like, old people who don't know how TikTok works? You're telling me you don't know the connotation of Smash.
Do you even know how TikTok works?
Yes.
Do you?
It's run by China.
From CBR.com, David Popoze puts Marvel's criminals in a new Punisher's crosshairs. This fall, a former S.H.I.E.L.D. Black Ops agent takes up Castle's mantle and embarks on his own crusade of vengeance. His name is Joe Garrison, and readers will meet him in the pages of November's Punisher Number 1 by writer David Popoze and artist David Wachter. CBR spoke with Popoze about creating the new Punisher, the ways he's similar to and different from Castle, and people he's hunting, and the ones that are hot on his heels. I cut out all of the interview because it was really long. But this issue comes out on November 8th.
I think I know why they're doing this, and I think it's cool. Because from what I can gather, having not finished all of it, the Frank Castle is either dead or in hell or something after the most recent run. Like I said, I don't know because I'm not done with it. So I think he's going to come back and be like, what the fuck are you doing? This is not what I was doing. You're an idiot. I'm actually fucked up and psychotic. You're just a piece of shit. I think that's what they're doing.
Who's the Punisher right now?
This new guy. I think this new guy is going to... They're going to make him an example of what the Punisher is not.
Yeah.
Frank is going to be like, you're stupid. Because he's... After having his shenanigans with the Foot Clan, I think he's out of commission right now. I don't know the specifics of it. I just know he's not, like... Currently not bumping around.
He looks like a skinhead.
That may or may not be intentional. We will see.
Hopefully it is.
Honestly, if they had the balls, that would be great.
Harumph.
Beans. From comicbook.com, Blade co-creator Marv Wolfman returns to Marvel for Vampire Slayer's 50th anniversary. What if Marv Wolfman returned to Marvel Comics to turn Blade the Vampire Slayer into a bloodthirsty vampire? 50 years after Wolfman and artist Gene Colan created the half-human, half-vampire Daywalker, in 1973's Tomb of Dracula number 10, the legendary writer will ask the question, what if the Lord of the Vampires sunk his teeth into Eric Brooks, cursing him with eternal bloodlust? In celebration of Blade's milestone anniversary, Wolfman and artist David Cutler are teaming up for the one-shot What If Dark Tomb of Dracula number 1 this November. In 1972, I was a fledgling comics writer who mostly wrote short 2-to-8-page monster stories when editor Roy Thomas asked if I'd like to write Tomb of Dracula, my very first series for Marvel, and the book that would jumpstart my career, Wolfman said in a statement about the horror comic that pits the Prince of Darkness against vampire hunters and supernatural threats alike. So it is a real thrill now that 50-plus years later, Marvel asked me to once again dive into that pool with this very special What If story and to bring back that great cast of characters that artist Gene Colan and I created so many years ago. Thank you, Marvel, for giving me the chance to play with my old friends one last time. So most of the What If Dark books have been hot trash, but this looks really fucking
cool. This kind of looks cool.
This is cool.
This looks cool.
I'm a sucker. Marvel's been doing this a lot lately, where they'll bring back original creators or, like, very influential people in a character's history to come back and do more stories, and it seems like a lot of those have been good.
I'm also a sucker for, like, old vampire stuff.
Yes! So. Speaking of, Blade is getting an omnibus pretty soon of all the old stuff, and I am so hot over it, because it's really hard to get a hold of a lot of those. The trades are a mess, because a lot of it wasn't Blade books yet. So, like, it's a big, fat omnibus for, like, $100. I think it's out in, like, October or something. For, like, basically all of the old stuff before he started getting his own solo books. Because you can still kind of get a hold of those, even though most of those suck.
Mm.
Except the current run, which I am reading, which I will not talk about.
I kind of want to watch Blade 1 again.
Yes, do it. Spookytober is coming.
Yes, I'm excited for Spookytober. Right now, we are in September.
I was going to say Scalding September, but that works too.
Scalding September?
It's still a little hot.
Not really. We still get cold nights.
Well, we get cold nights, but like the middle of the day is still pretty hot.
No simp September.
No women.
No women. No women. Touch my thingy. No hold hand. From Polygon. Yes, it is still.
Yes.
Okay. From Polygon. WandaVision, Mandalorian, and Loki are finally getting flashy Blu-ray releases.
Ooh.
All four of the seasons will get 4K, UHD, and Blu-ray releases and come in special collector's edition steelbooks. The release dates for all four is Loki Season 1, September 26. WandaVision, the complete series, November 28th. And The Mandalorian seasons 1 and 2, December 12th. I want The Mandalorian on
those
Blu-ray.
Those are more expensive, too. I left in the prices. So Loki, Mandalorian season 1 and 2 are $55 a whack. And then WandaVision's $46.
Very odd. pricing mm-hmm. wise. Mm-hmm. I don't care about the steelbooks. I just care that we're getting physical discs for the
Yeah, I don't care steelbooks.
Like I used to be into that, but it's more just it's been years and Disney they've been pulling original series off of the service like Willow. And it's like no disc? Okay, Pirate Bay, here we go. Like mm-hmm. I need
the physical
media, streaming sucks, etc., etc. So that this is cool.
Give the crab his physical disc, yes.
What the fuck?
Give the crab his physical, yes.
I'm going to start this out by saying Screen Rant's website is awful. It is covered in clickbait like a wild animal is covered in text. But they had this to report. Marvel's Universe Exploding new series G-O-D-S, all in capital letters with periods in between the letters, is its Cosmic House of X. Marvel has released a number of new teasers for Gods, the new comic series co-created by Jonathan Hickman, the original architect of its most recent X-Men status quo. While Gods remains somewhat shrouded in mystery, the ambition is obvious with a slew of new characters, designs, and ideas. In a comics landscape where familiarity often triumphs, this series promises to shake things up and change the very structure of the Marvel Universe. Written by Jonathan Hickman and illustrated by Valerio Schiti, Marvel is clearly hoping that Gods replicates the success of Hickman's previous epic, this X-Men dual miniseries House of X Powers of 10, which was revolutionary not just in plot, but in how it facilitated week-to-week fan discussion. Teased at San Diego Comic-Con 2022 before being formally announced in March 23, Gods is, along with House of X Powers of 10, one of two stories Hickman pitched to Marvel when he returned after hiatus following 2015's seminal Secret Wars. Marvel explains God's core concept. The highly anticipated saga will bring to light an eons-old conflict between the powers that be and the natural order of things. Two opposite factions that serve the familiar omnipotent forces of the Marvel Universe, such as Eternity, Infinity, and the Living Tribunal. Gods number one releases from Marvel Comics on October the 4th.
Okay, I am buying this and I'm following this. They've been teasing it in a bunch of other books and it looks super fucking cool. All the interviews are like, yep, so we're doing Sandman, but in Marvel, kind of, sort of, not really, but kind of. Cosmic shit. They're like, but there's, you know, behind the hands that make the things, there's bigger hands!
Bigger hands! Outer Gods. I love that.
It's bigger shit. I love this stuff.
Dude, I love hearing lore about the hand from Smash Bros.
True.
He's got a point.
It looks super fucking cool. The main characters are very interesting so far. They've been popping up in some other books. A lot of Marvel floppies have had a couple of pages of like Gods teasers in the back, and it looks really cool.
Is that your guy, Doctor the Strange, the cover?
That's the thing. He's actually not Doctor the Strange. Well, sort of. He has a different name who I don't remember. But he did pop up in Doctor Strange, I think, last month. And it's like, oh, and Doctor Strange is like, oh, hello, person who is clearly leading up to an event. How are you? And it's very... Apparently, there's explanations for all of that sort of stuff. That character is on one side of it, and then his, like, lover is on the other side. They're doing a whole Romeo and Juliet, but, like, cosmic infinities shit. I'm so for it. Horny. From Variety, Walt Disney Pictures VFX workers move to unionize. Visual effects crews at Walt Disney Studios have taken a significant step to unionize after filing with the National Labor Relations Board for an election to unionize.
Beans.
A supermajority, over 80% of the 18 in-house VFX crew members at Walt Disney Pictures, signed authorization cards signaling their desire to unionize. The historical move is the second time in history that VFX professionals have joined together to demand the same protections and rights as their colleagues. Earlier this month, VFX crews at Marvel Studios voted to unionize beginning August 21st. Ballots are due on September 11th, and the vote count will take place on September 12th. VFX workers have remained non-union since the field was pioneered during the production of the first Star Wars films in the 70s and 80s. As part of the move, unionizing workers are demanding fair compensation for all hours worked, adequate health care, retirement benefits, and more generally the same rights and protections afforded to their unionized coworkers who are already represented by the IATSE.
I want to jump in right there real quick and be like, there's a reason that George Lucas did it without, did Star Wars without the unions, because they wanted to take all of the money from his idea or not let him make his idea in the first place. So the union was the problem back then, but now they're unionizing because the reverse has become the problem. The ununion has been the problem.
Yes.
It's just very weird. Continue.
The onion has been the problem.
Yes.
These demands echo the increasingly prevalent calls for improvements across the VFX industry and are corroborated with the sentiment uncovered at the 2022 VFX Workers' Rate and Conditions Survey, which was published in March. So the bigger picture with this is the reason why VFX are not unionized is because the field didn't become relevant enough until after Reagan started busting unions in the 80s. So all of film has been unionized since like the 20s, for the most part anyways. And then VFX in this way, anyways, only came about post nobody gets unions and everything sucks now. And frankly, the people who worked earlier in the VFX industry were all libertarian tech bros who like worship the technology and don't care about like seeing their families. And now that it's become like the biggest part of the industry, it's an entire different type of people that work. Yes. Like, it's just regular jobs now for artists. And it's like, it's a very interesting, like, how this happened in the bigger scale. It's very interesting. And it's also, again, like with the Marvel Studios VFX house that only had 12 people, this one only has 12 people. Sorry, 18. It's just, again, funny because every Disney Studios movie is some massive live-action CG fucking fuckfest of bullshit. And it's like, yeah, it's all outsourced, too. But,
These last three are from comicbook.com. Exclusive DC reveals sequels to Batman 89 and Superman 78. DC will continue to explore two of its most popular iterations of Batman and Superman. And we've got your exclusive first look at both projects. Today, DC announced sequels to the announced sequels to Batman 89, Superman 78, which will be titled Batman 89, Echoes Number 1, and Superman 78, The Metal Curtain. Sussy. Batman 89, Echoes reunites with Batman 89 screenwriter Sam Hamm with artist Joe Quinantos, while Superman 78, The Metal Curtain brings back writer Robert Venditti and new series artist Gavin Gudry. I know this man! I like that man. Echoes picks up after Harvey Dent's war against Gotham and Batman has completely disappeared. That causes the citizens of Gotham to take on the crime of the city themselves. And as the injured start to stack up, everyone is wondering what happens to the Dark Knight. Over in the Metal Curtain, Superman is settling into his life on Earth. But what he doesn't know is that a piece of his home might have landed somewhere else on Earth. So there's a lot of fucking just saying 89, 89, 78. In this. So Batman 89 Echoes number 1 on sale 11/28/23. Superman 78 The Metal Curtain number 1 on sale 11/7/23. So very soon. This seems pretty cool.
That covers the next story.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's cool that they were received so well that they're getting sequel series and they're keeping three quarters of the original teams.
Settling in on his life on Earth?
I think it's gonna be a Supergirl thing. I have a feeling. I think
so. Yeah, let me see. Yep, Gildry.
It's always interesting when Colin actually recognizes a name.
Yeah, because I know I follow this otter. I follow this artist on Twitter.
I also follow otters on Twitter. They're very cute, especially when they, like, rub their faces.
Ooh, these Batman covers are hot, dude. Oh, the Batmobile. Ugh. Joker, Batman. Ugh. So good. The Superman ones, besides Gildry, and I'm probably not even saying his name right, are pretty mid. I just like Gildry. Otherwise, the covers are mid as fuck.
Damn.
Excited. I will buy and I will read only when it comes all together in a trade.
Batman. Batman. Can be blah blah.
Yeah.
Oh no, Gotham has to protect itself? It's almost like that's what citizens are supposed to do. Also, where the fuck is Robin?
Don't ask questions.
Beans. DC previews new The Penguin series, and the Batman villain may be kicking the bucket. Batman's old foe, The Penguin, is getting a new DC comic book series, and the preview for it sets some pretty high stakes. Man, I fell apart editing this. I try to take those clicky things away, for the source.
You got drunk.
No, I didn't actually.
Otherwise, there'd be a lot more booby covers.
No.
No.
As you can see in the article, the preview for Tom King's Penguin number 1 takes a familiar approach to one of King's sordid characters' dramas by teasing us with a scene of our principal in dire straits before jumping back in time to explain how we got there. In this case, the dire straits are Batman and Penguin gravely injured and trapped inside the Batmobile, which is quickly sinking into Gotham River. The time jump backwards is significant. 1 year earlier, when Oswald is hiding out in Metropolis after faking his death to frame Batman, which sparked the drastic twists and turns of Chip Zdarsky's Batman arcs Failsafe and the Batman of Gotham. Penguin got plastic surgery and was seen running a flower shop in Gotham before having to relocate to Metropolis, while Catwoman was tasked with tracking down his next of kin. Holy shit, this story is hard! King and company have teased that the Penguin comic series will see Oswald going up against his bastard twins, Addison and Aiden Cobblepot, who showed up in the Catwoman backup story for Batman number 126 to claim their father's holdings during his will reading. I included that part just because I wanted to say the bastard word.
The bastard.
It's been made clear that the next generation of Cobblepots will be taking organized crime in Gotham to the next level enough so that the U.S. intelligence community feels the need to get involved and send in Penguin as their Trojan horse. But the Cobblepot kids don't seem like they're going to be looking for a happy family reunion. The Penguin number 1 is on sale August 22nd, so it is already out.
Doing Penguin, but the Godfather. I'm so up on this.
Go, 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 go.
Go, go, go. It looks really good. The interior art is super fucking shiny and shit.
Wow.
Mob stories and shit.
Wow.
Tom King.
Tom Cumming.
DC announces a new Speed Force series starring the Flash family.
Fuck.
A few members of the Flash family are about to get spotlighted in the Dawn of DC initiative. On Thursday, DC exclusively announced via Comics Beat plans to publish Speed Force, a new miniseries that will center on Wallace Ace West slash Kid Flash, that's the one that was introduced in the New 52, and Avery Ho, the Flash of China. The series is written by Jarrett Williams and illustrated by Danielle Di Nicuello. Speed Force number 1 will be released on November 14th with a main cover by the interior artist. It will have variant artwork by Lyrix and Mike Diodato Jr. That's fucking awesome. Speed Force follows Wallace West and Avery Ho, the young speedsters that have been Teen Titans, Justice Leaguers, and above all, members of the Flash family. As they become aware of mysterious changes happening across the Speed Force, they race to Keystone City where they encounter old friends, new threats, and a chance to forge their own paths. So, I like this version of the Kid Flash because I got into the Flash with the New 52, which means everyone's gonna hate me now because it's weird, and Flash fans are crazy. I think he's cool. I am very unfamiliar with the Flash of China. There's been so much Flash stuff the past couple of years in the comics world. Most of it apparently has been really good. I just can't keep up with it at all.
It sounds like they don't know what to do with the Flash anymore.
Especially after a failed movie.
Yep.
I just really like the art for this. It looks very cool. It's very Flashish, you know? It looks
fascist?
Yes. Flashy. Flashish.
Flashish.
It looks like it fits. The covers
look cool.
It looks
very flaccid.
No, my dick looks very flaccid. You know what else is very flaccid?
My dick.
Jacob.
Huh?
What did you do this week?
Speaking of flaccid.
I tried to give you a segue, man.
I read Spider-Woman Origin, written by Brian Michael Bendis.
Bendis. Mr. Bendis.
It has all five issues of Spider-Woman's strange origin. Her parents are scientists, and they're sciencing the how to weaponize spiders. Like, making the Spider-Man technology, basically. But with these weird, exotic spiders. And the spider beam goes off and shoots into Spider-Woman's mom while she's pregnant with Spider-Woman. And that makes Spider-Woman Spider-Woman.
This?
Her origin's fucking crazy.
So she's been Spider-Woman... But, like, her powers aren't even spider-related, are they? Oh,
they talk about that. She has weird zappy powers. Yeah. She goes, bleh, with her hands. Turns out her parents might have been working for Hydra or something.
Whoa.
Hydra was actually trying to weaponize the Spider-Man beam. There's a lot of time that goes by in this origin. It's like the longest origin ever, because she grows up and she's got like a weird time jump. Hydra takes her when she's like 9 and then throws her in the Mr. Freeze's wife cask. And, like, ages her to, like, 17. So she's, like, a 9-year-old in a 17-year-old's body. And she has to decide who the good guys is and the bad guys is. And, this was a mess.
Spider-Woman's one of those characters where Comic Drake will just make a video about it and be like, this is the most weird-ass, fucking crazy, convoluted origin story.
And it's not even good. There's so many plot holes in it. In 5 issues. Like, how hard is it to just write an origin story? Apparently it's really hard.
Bendis is such a weird guy. He's super... Either he'll make, like, the best thing you've ever read, followed up by, like, the worst thing.
You'll notice I went from my flaccid segue to it's really hard in that review.
Thank you. Now I'm hard.
Thank you. So, it looked okay, but there was really nothing to write home about. I don't know. I was not impressed. I got it from my Magical Library app, which is not code for pirating, I swear. I actually do have a library card membership. So I read it for free.
This gives off the same energy as, I know she looks like she's 5, but she's actually 3,000 years old.
Yeah, it does.
Then why does she look like a 5-year-old? Because looking like a child's hot.
Yes.
Ew.
She's still a minor.
It's really weird.
But yeah. She comes out of the Nora cask. And also she stands naked in front of a bunch of Hydra dudes.
That's weird.
When she climbs out of there. So, yeah, it was really weird and not good.
Speaking of naked.
Oh.
I watched the movie, the 2013 movie, The Necessary Death of Charlie Countryman.
What?
Yeah, I knew you would know what it is. Starring Shia LaBeouf and Mads Mikkelsen.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
I bet they're gay lovers in this movie.
Nope.
Damn it!
It is a love triangle, though. This movie follows Charlie Countryman, whose mother just passed away, and he goes to Bucharest because the spirit of his mom told him he should do that. And he's trying to find his way through life, and he's like, wow, I hate all of life, and I want to feel something. Goes to Bucharest, and on the plane, he meets this man, and he talks to him about all these things that he's loved and lost in his whole life, because they get on the subject of his mother dying, because he's a Romanian guy who's going back home to Bucharest, and he's asking him, like, why are you going there? Don't you mean Budapest? And he's like, no, Bucharest. And on this plane ride, they both fall asleep, wake up. Shia LaBeouf's character, Charlie Countryman, wakes up to find the Romanian guy dead. And on the rest of this flight, the Romanian guy's dead body speaks to Charlie Countryman, telling him to say something to his daughter, because he was bringing a gift for her. And so then he meets his daughter, named Gabby, played by Evan Rachel Wood. And she is this hot, kind of emo, short-haired Romanian girl that he is slowly falling in love with. But there's a twist. Her husband is back, ex-husband, and he is like a gangster dude, and he is played by Mads Mikkelsen. So Charlie Countryman is trying to get his... he's basically just moving. He moved to Bucharest just to live, because his whole life he's never done anything. And then he meets this girl, and he finds himself in the predicament of this. And there's a lot of weird stuff that happened to this, like when they're driving, they're following the ambulance to the hospital, and the two guys in the ambulance are like getting high as fuck, and then they get into a car accident, and then the dead body of her father like falls, like flies out of the ambulance and like goes right onto the road. And to like help her like not get terrible images in her head, they get off on the side of the road, and he makes sure that she gets nowhere near the body, because you don't want to see that, you don't want to be near that. And what his dead mother said to him, the spirit of his dead mother said to him, is that like, you gotta think of something, like replace the bad memory with the good memory. Because he's like, Charlie Countryman talking to his dead mother, he's like, I just have this awful image of you, and I just can't deal with that. And she's like, replace it with a good memory. Just erase it, and then remember all the good times that we had, and just keep that there. And so he taught her that, and blah, blah, blah. And it's actually a really fucking good movie.
How did you get onto watching this?
I will never tell. Fuck you.
Yes. He accidentally found the porno version and was like, actually, I want to see the real version.
Fuck. no, I just found it. And
weird.
Yes.
I find this very suspicious.
My next topic will explain how I found this.
Oh, gosh.
This was actually a really good movie, and I really liked it. The premise sounds funny, but it's really emotional, and you gotta watch it.
Trauma!
It's not really like trauma. Did you say trauma or drama?
Trauma.
Trauma, yes. Yes. It's actually really good.
Trauma is really good.
Also, this movie, the gangster husband is trying to like get his wife back, even though she like divorced him, and also he was gone from Bucharest for a while because her father had a tape of him and his buddy doing something. Not that.
I knew there was gay porn in this movie.
It's not that. They were doing the murder, and it's on the videotape, and that's how he kept him away from Bucharest.
The fuck?
Because he had it on a videotape, and he was going to tell the authorities if blah, blah, blah.
I love it when Colin tries to give a summary and I have to parse through it to figure out what the plot is.
I already told you the plot.
With 18 pit stops along the way to describe scenes.
I hear it a couple of times.
The biggest run-on sentence.
Because I edit it, I hear it a couple of times, and then I go and watch the movie and I'm like, what was he talking about?
You're not watching what I'm watching. You're not looking at the same things that I look at. Like Gabby's boobs. It's actually a really good movie, and I think you'd like it.
Oh, boy.
I'd give it a solid 6. 6 donuts out of 7 Shia LaBeoufs.
Okay.
7 Shia LaBeoufs.
That's a lot of wife beating.
I don't like that, because he's trying to fucking get himself together, okay? So fuck off. Leave my Shia LaBeouf alone.
He raped a woman.
Leave my Shia LaBeouf alone.
Wow. So, In contrast to that, I watched something much more up Colin's alley. I got to watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem because I'm cooler than you, and I'm cooler than you.
I watched it too, obviously, from last recording.
Yeah, shut the fuck up. So it's another reimagining of the
Twink Shredder.
JoJo pose.
Oh my gosh, yes, Twink Shredder. It's another reimagining of the origin and first escapades of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It is an animated film heavily inspired by the animation styles of Into the Spider-Verse and other projects like that, blah, blah, blah. This is, like, certified hood classic banger. This is so fucking good.
It's certified hood classic.
It's the old meme. And this movie is also full of old memes, and I really like it. It's a very straightforward plot. It's just about mutants and being all like, wow, but what if the humans suck? And then the mutants are like, but what if we kill the humans? And then the turtles are like, that's bad, actually. Don't do that. And then they fight. It's very straightforward. There aren't ninjas in it. There aren't Foot Clan. There's no Shredder. It's just about mutant shit, which is great.
That's why it's called Mutant Mayhem.
Yeah, I know, right? Get a fucking break from all the ninja shit for 5 minutes.
I'm glad you're here to explain the title to him.
Thank you. The
what's wrong with ninja shit?
Nothing's wrong with it, but that's
not what they are.
So my review, which hits on most of my high points, Mutant Mayhem is a series of more convoluted in real life decisions that have to work in order for the movie to work, and somehow it pulls it off. They have child actors as the teenagers. They have a stacked celebrity voice cast as the mutants, all who have like one line and do nothing in the movie. They're just there to put a name on the poster, but they don't detract from the movie. It is in a really crazy animation style. It's an animated movie in this current market right now, which is not a good bet. It's written by Seth fucking Rogen, which is very polarizing, I guess. Some people really like his stuff. Me. Some people really don't. I get it. This thing is somehow insane. Like, there's no way that they made all these decisions. Like, cosmically speaking, all the planets aligned in one row for this to work. It's not reinventing the story wheel. It's not as emotionally resonant as Into the Spider-Verse. I don't care. The animation is stunning, the camera work is flawless, and the vocal performances are astounding. The comedy is hysterical. Every single joke made me laugh. And there's just enough cringe to remind you that these are dorky-ass 15-year-old children. Multiple instances of, like, guys, you know, you shouldn't actually do that thing, that's kind of dumb. And then they're like, yeah, but we're gonna keep doing it. Like, so much of this movie is just focused on them being kids in a good way. They're pathetic and dorky, and I want to punch all of them in the face, and I love them, and they are my perfect little baby boys. Because you want to squish them into a small cube, because they're so fucking stupid. They're just speaking in meme and TikTok language all the time, but it's not cringe. It is cringe, but not in the way that like makes me want to leave the movie. I don't understand how they wrote this thing.
Ooze.
Yeah. It rolls off the tongue better. Yeah, I don't understand. Apparently a very large amount of their lines were recorded in, all four of the teenagers would get in one room, and a lot of this was them riffing, and the chemistry is fucking off the charts.
They're all just, no wonder you just have all the stupid memes, because it's just literally the kids hanging out.
Yeah. They're also younger than, I think a couple of them are younger than the age of the turtles they're playing. They're like 13 or 14. I think, don't quote me, which means that they're able to age into these characters really well. This is the only Ninja Turtles anything where they genuinely feel like teenagers. 2012 had a little bit of that. They felt more like babies. And the 90s movie and 2003 series are my favorite Turtles things, but they don't feel like teenagers.
No, so those are full grown.
Those are grown-ass men. They're just,
those are grown-ass men.
They're just man babies.
Yeah, they're college dudes who have, like, man caves, and they're, like, you know, living the bachelor life.
Yes.
Where, like, 2012 didn't... Those guys felt like they just got out of high school.
I guess.
Maybe into, like, college, but even when they talked about some things, it just didn't seem like... They sounded like kids, or teens, or young adults, but they also talked like they were... adults, because they're written by people who don't know how kids work.
Yeah. The pacing is a little rough. There's a lot of whiplash between like the pacing of scenes and the general plotting. And I don't care for the Leonardo and April romantic subplot stuff. I'm tired of April getting paired off with a turtle.
Yep.
It's fine. It's not like it made me cringe. It's just like, could we stop with this? But April is really cool as well.
That makes me cringe.
Yes. But all of the my gripes are like pennies on the dollar for a movie that is on par with the all-time like 90s live-action classic. This is genuinely one of the best turtle things in existence. I don't understand how this happened. It looks beyond perfect. It's fun. It's funny. I was wheezing watching this with a group of adults and children. Like, a bunch of college people, and I was with my girlfriend's younger sister, who is 16, and she was losing her fucking shit. Like, Donatello wears a JoJo hoodie.
Yes.
To school.
Yes.
And also, the movie ends with them in a very different status quo than we have ever had. They're out to the public and going to high school. Like, what the fuck? It's really? Super weird.
That's so
and they're
weird.
Friends with all the mutants. Like, the bad guys do the whole maybe we're not actually bad guys thing.
Oh.
It's super weird. I don't get it, weird. But it's really cool. There's apparently, supposed to be a sequel TV series between this and the next movie.
Hmm.
Whatever. I'm sure that'll be fine. But I can't believe that this works. And it's also making decent money at the box office. So.
Is it still out in theaters?
Yeah.
I need to go.
Yes, you should. It's so funny. Because Raph is like, ah, I'm angry. And then they're like, you just need to, like, go outside. The amount of silliness in this movie.
So,
you know the song, that silly He-Man meme song?
Yeah.
It's in this movie!
Of course it is.
And they play it dramatically. It's over a chase sequence. It's so fucking insane.
So I have a question for you, though.
What?
Now with the new status quo of Ninja Turtles... Who are we as Ninja Turtles?
Oh,
go right now.
I don't think much has changed in that way. That's my key indicator for any good Ninja Turtles adaptation is how well you do Leonardo, because he is the boring one with, you know, the most flexible character.
Mm-hmm.
And this does a really good job of making him the older sibling who's like, yeah, of course I want to go have fun. I'm the one who's going to get in shit if you guys do anything dumb. Please don't. And they work with that really well. Most of this movie is him needing to kind of come out of his shell.
Sound like the Lego Batman.
Yeah. This is so good. They're spot on. What?
So does that mean I'm Donatello now because he wears an anime hoodie?
You bitched at us for trying to get rid of the you're the anime guy. And now you're bringing it up.
I said, ditch the anime guy outside the podcast. In the podcast, it's fine.
Penis.
Because this is for the meme. As long as none of you guys call me anime guy outside and it's just them using their own stupid brain to call me the anime guy, it's different.
Which turtle am I again? I always forget.
I feel like Donatello actually kind of fits.
I feel like Donatello, but sometimes I feel like he's Leonardo.
Really?
The boring guy.
Oof. Thank you.
That's fair.
Okay, for everyone listening, it's in air. I did air quotes. The boring guy, because he's kind of like
Jacob's. He's boring, but actually, he's got
Jacob's
layers.
Really fun. I love Jacob, but also like from outsider's point of view, you can't really tell much because he just doesn't want you to see much until he takes his dick out.
Don't talk to
him. True.
Yeah.
Just let me take my dick out.
You guys need to watch this. It's hysterical.
We will.
We should, if you guys don't watch it in theaters, we should just hang out and watch it because it's super fucking fun.
You want to go on a date?
Only if you hold my hand.
I will hold your hand while we watch Ninja Turtles.
Oh. I'll get the big bucket of popcorn.
Yeah.
All right.
You're disgusting.
Jacob.
I read Batman. One bad day.
Holy shitty
Holy man. Shit! It's the Play-Doh Demon Man!
Clayface. I thought it was a typo when the opening page with like the title and the credits says no notes after Clayface. I was like, what? Oops. But no, actually that's the like subtitle name of the issue is where'd it go? Batman, One Bad Day, Clayface, No Notes. Where is it? Right there.
Imagine if we had two toilets in one bathroom and we just sat there and started shitting one.
I will work on putting another toilet in my bathroom.
Or you can just waffle stomp.
I have to clean that. Fuck you.
You have to clean that?
Yeah.
I work in a place with locker rooms.
They waffles? I should have known.
Yeah, people waffle stomp.
Colin's face is perfect.
He's forgotten that it's a real thing that actually happens.
You know how there's like so many things in like that we joke about that aren't real? Like people don't, most people won't eat cereal out of a woman's asshole, right?
Well,
you're talking to the wrong guy. He's literally done that.
Literally yesterday.
Clayface was written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, and the art was made by Germanico. What? It was the issue was drawn by Zerg.
Oh, I just love how we're terrible with names.
Okay, Mr. Name Guy.
I said I love how we're terrible.
I know.
Okay, Zermancio.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Zerman.
This is.
Oh, no, it's Zerman. Zermanincio. X's or Z's?
Silence, baby.
Ezio.
Ezio Auditore de Firenze!
Oh my fucking word. We have an Assassin's Creed fan in the midst.
I've been playing
this. I've been doing this for the entirety of my life.
I know, dude.
Oh my god. I've been playing a lot of Assassin's Creed 2 this week.
Oh boy. I had that phase.
The best phase.
This is the worst phase.
This is probably the best One Bad Day book so far.
Yeah!
Hey! I think I enjoyed it the most because Clayface has a bad day.
Oh, does he have his Joker moment?
He does a murder or five. And then gets caught and says, I'm sorry, it was just a bad day. And I was like, holy shit! He's the name of the book!
I really like the sequence at the end where he's like running away and Batman is just like actually having pity on him. This book is so good.
This book was really, really good. It investigates Clayface's actor side of his character a lot more than I've really seen. Most of the time, I mean, I think in the animated series they had it a little bit, but most of the time Clayface shows up, he's in his clay form, and he's like, basically the Sandman from Spider-Man. It's just like, oh, he does any shape, he's boring. But this was really good. I liked. $18 hardcover. Would recommend. 5 out of 5.
I think Sandman's actually you compare Clayface to Sandman. I compare Sandman to Clayface because I think Clayface is more interesting visually and story-wise anyways.
The point was that they have the same-ish powers and people just use Clayface as like, oh, he can turn into a dumpster or he can turn into a car.
I would get in that car.
This looks so good.
It's so good.
Have you not read this one?
I've only read like 2 Bad Days.
You should read this one.
It's.
I know. I will. I'm gonna get it collected. Not collected, but like the thing. The stupid thing.
That is legit. Like tied as my favorite. It's so good.
What was your other favorite?
I think Riddler.
Ugh. I have 2 left.
Riddler was like my favorite.
We know.
Bane and Ra's al Ghul.
I like Bane a good bit.
Bane is next.
Ooh, wait, is Bane the one where they do...
Don't tell me!
Stop! I'm not gonna actually fucking spoil it. They do, like, the panel side by side, and it's, like, a parallel. Is that the one?
I don't remember.
Is Bane actually the one where he dies in the end? No!
Fucking word. I watched a new favorite movie of mine now.
Oh, boy.
In April 1945, the Allies are making their final push in the European theater. A battle-hardened army sergeant named Don War Daddy Collier, played by Brad Pitt, leading a Sherman tank and a 5-man crew, undertakes a deadly mission behind enemy lines. Hopelessly outnumbered, outgunned, and saddled with an inexperienced soldier, Logan Lerman, in their midst. War Daddy and his men face overwhelming odds as the move to strike at the heart of the Nazi Germany. I watched 2014's Fury.
Dude, this movie is another certified hood classic.
This is a banger. This is a fucking banger, dude. I almost cried.
Yeah.
I almost cried.
You'll twice. Notice how it didn't.
Shut the fuck up.
I did it. I almost cried.
Shia LaBeouf ripped out his own tooth for this. Dude, which is a little retarded.
But it is retarded, but he is retarded. He looked like... So the acting is phenomenal.
The most strungly guy.
I'm gonna start off with I really liked Bible, which is played by Shia LaBeouf. At first, I really liked him because he's just this... First off, there's the whole he's a Christian in this, like, place in the time in the world where it's like, this is not, like... No Christians survive here, or no one stays a Christian, or whatever, because you see this all these horrors, and it's like, how can you believe in God and bullshit like that? And, like, obviously, not to that extent, I can't relate, but to the idea of being a Christian in a place that, a place in your heart, or a place in the world, or a place in people where, like, you, most people wouldn't stay Christian, you know? And to see him... That was like a, okay, I can kind of relate. And also, the acting was crazy because he just looked like he was constantly, looked like he was about to cry. Constantly. He had, his eyes were watery and they were like glossed over.
Apparently, he did the stupid method, I didn't shower for 3 weeks every time we filmed bullshit, but he looks stinky.
Yeah, he does. And then, of course, we have... this is just like a packed roster. We have Brad Pitt, War Daddy. War Daddy was great. I like how they didn't overdo the whole, like, I'm in war, I'm going to go off and cry. He had one scene where he, like, was holding back a panic attack and then found a place to do it. Because he's the leader of these guys. He can't show weakness. Leaders in that type of position, they can't do that or they're going to lose everyone. So he went off somewhere and cried. We have the main kid who is the dumbass who let a bunch of people die because he's like, but that was a kid that killed those guys. Yeah, he fucking killed them and he's going to kill you too. So it's War Daddy abused him and was showing him that he needs to kill people because they're Nazis. Then we have the Punisher. I can't remember his name.
John Bernthal.
And I can't remember his, like, character's, like, name in this either. But he was rough. He pissed me off. But then there's times I liked him because he told the kid that he's a good person. And he doesn't think any of them are good people. But he's a good guy. And I liked that. And then also another one of my favorite guys. He played in the End of Watch. I can't remember him.
Michael Pena.
He was great. There's just so many good scenes. The color grading, everything, the acting, fantastic fucking movie. I give this movie 7 tanks out of 7 War Daddies.
This movie is like Du Bois get in the tank and then everyone's a shitty person.
Yeah, this made me want to go to war. Like, this is like one of those movies like, I want to get into a fucking tank and die.
I think you took the opposite message of the movie, Colin.
I know, I just can't help it because dude, imagine being in a fucking tank with your boys, but not being a shitty person, but being in a tank with your boys. That shit goes hard. I mean, come on.
You know what else goes hard?
What?
Blue Beetle.
You watched it?
Yeah.
It's out?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's been out for 2 weeks.
Damn.
Yes. Sometimes a solid flick is all you need to be. The stunts and fighting sequences are well handled, if fairly minimal. The practical effects and costuming are immaculate, and the chemistry is legit. The world building is very vague, but substantial enough to satiate my curiosity. And the use of the Blue Beetle mythos is very well handled. The body horror, while fairly minimal, is a very appreciated touch. It's a lot more goofy than I expected, but a lot of the jokes land, and the actors were clearly having the time of their lives on set. The social commentary surrounding class and race dynamics are present and clearly form from a common place of pain for the people involved, from the screenwriter and the director and the actors. But it was a bit too surface level for my liking, especially when paired with the extremely, extremely over-the-top tone that the movie has. Both of the villains, frankly, kind of suck ass. But the fights are very good. The score goes hard as hell. So this movie was about what I was expecting. The reception it's been getting has been fairly warm. It's not perfect. It has some pretty big flaws. It does suffer from... This was probably supposed to be a streaming movie. It has a bit of a chintzy bit for the VFX, you know. But the sets are good when they're present. The costume is insanely good looking. The nanotech looks fantastic. The family dynamic is done really well. And it leans in on that pretty hard, which I appreciate. The score goes so hard. The theme is so good. And this movie is really good at... Is it in the DCEU? Is it in the DCU? We don't know! Which is annoying, but it really doesn't draw attention away from itself by being all continuity heavy. It acknowledges other characters exist, and the timelines are all weird, but it's set in its own city, made just for this, and you could do whatever you want with it. It has sequel bait, which I think is interesting, because Ted Kord, Blue Beetle 2, is missing. I think it sets up a really cool dynamic. And also, the actor that they definitely used as, like, the model for, like, paintings or the costumes or whatever for Ted Kord Blue Beetle is, what's his name?
But is his lesbian lover Booster Gold there, too?
No.
Oh.
No, there is no Booster Gold in this movie.
Fuck.
You know the guy that plays Ted Lasso?
No.
Damn.
Who's Ted Lasso?
This motherfucker doesn't know what Ted Lasso is.
I mean, I'm sounds right there familiar. With him.
God damn you people.
fuck. What do you mean, whatever. About you people?
You people. Whatever. The actor that they definitely didn't actually officially use, but want to use for Ted Kord Blue Beetle, I think is a really good pick as well. The chemistry is good. It's very fun. It's very funny. The biggest thing that I like about this, other than the fact that like some of the fights are pretty cool,
big
is the...
Big anime sword.
Yes, big anime sword. The thing that I like the most... is that he's not a high schooler. He's 22. He's out of college. And it's such a weird thing to get attached to, but I'm so tired of the, wow, high schooler superhero origin. And Jaime Reyes is a perpetual high schooler or college student in the comics. Like, he's a young superhero, but this actor does not look like he's 17. He looks like he's in his early 20s. Let him be in his early 20s.
This is polarizing from his last review.
I know, especially because his favorite superhero is the Spider-Man.
It is.
No, it's not.
Oh, I forgot. It's the Trash Man.
It is the Trash Man. I had a blast with this. It's
the,
a little...
The Trash Man is actually his dad.
It's a little overly long, and it definitely could have used a few more months to bake. And it's a shame that this is kind of stuck in this awkward place of we don't know what it's if it's going to be continued or not. We don't know if the character will get carried over, but the movie's not canon or whatever. But like,
fun movie.
Very fun. Like I have it a little under like the first Shazam in that area. Very fun, funny, well-made, standalone.
It sounds like you have a higher reading of the first Shazam than I do.
I do. Shazam was like a, I think I have a 4 out of 5, and this was like a 3.5 out of 5.
Huh.
So we're in that neck of the woods. Very fun. Motherfucker has a scarab go up his asshole. It's hilarious.
What? Up his asshole?
How do you think it gets in?
It doesn't get in. Yeah, it attaches does. On the back.
No, it goes in and then it goes through his spine.
What? Are you serious? Deadass.
The movie is really goofy and really over the top, but the couple of scenes that they have where, like, he transforms, it's disgustingly horrible. It's, like, all his fucking, like, clothes burn off, he's, like, superheating, and his skin's fucking melting, and the technology is...
So it hurts every single time he changes.
It's so
every dark. Single time?
Seemingly, yeah. It's gnarly as hell. The first sequence, it...
Ah!
Yeah, no, he's like, oh my god, look, it's a bug, and then it just, you know...
Goes up his ass.
Yeah.
Why not in his mouth?
Because it's funnier if it goes up his ass.
Bro, I'm scared of this movie now.
Nah, it's fucking hilarious. It's just, there's a couple of scenes where it's like, that's disturbing.
This is horror.
It sounds like a metal band, Anal Scarab.
Anal Scarab! I love it.
It's just a couple moments of body horror in a very goofy, you know, movie. But like, it just, that's cool. I like those little touches. It seems well thought out.
You know who else is an Anal Scarab?
Our patrons, Jeff Lawrence and Kate.
May as well just call them hemorrhoids. It's like the same thing.
So our new fan name is, you're not the Robins, you're our hemorrhoids.
They're always trying to crawl out of our assholes.
Is that how hemorrhoids work?
Sort of.
I don't know how they work.
I don't know.
I don't either. I don't really care to know about buttholes. I just like it when they whistle and wink at me at the same time.
Thank you for that information.
We need to wrap this up.
If you would like to help support this show financially, we'd greatly appreciate it. Go over to patreon.com/Dime Comic Bros Network. We have a bunch of cool swag from stickers to bookmarks.
.com.
Shut up!
You say it every time!
I'm still laughing about anal scarab.
Anal scarab?
We have a bunch of different rewards. We release our podcast early. We record exclusive segments where we crack open a beer. We talk shit. We talk shop. A lot of nipple twisting. Weird shit happens.
Don't touch my nipples.
I will touch your nipples. Also, go support our partners over at He Flinched So Hard. Oh my gosh. He's scared.
Wrap it up. Don't touch my nipples.
I will wrap up your dick.
And bacon. He's happy now.
Bacon.
Wrap it up. Wrap it up, manager man.
I'm going to kill myself. Go support our partners over at Jetpack Comics and Games. Shop local. Support your local comic shops. Only pirate comics when you have to, because it's good to have the stores and stuff.
Because Marvel doesn't reprint them, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Yeah, sometimes they don't reprint books because they're stupid. Yeah, go support your local shops. They do a lot of work to keep this industry like afloat. Next week, stuff will happen and we will be here.
We will be doing things.
We will be doing things.
Thank you. Come again.